Acevedo, Castro versus Garland. I think we also have two more lawyers also by Zoom. I believe Mr. Lucero is representing Mr. Acevedo Castro and Mrs. Snyder, I guess, for the government, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Richard Lucero on behalf of the petitioner, Ms. Gerber Acevedo. Your Honor, as I see this case, there are a few issues. The first issue would be the jurisdictional issue that the government raised in their supplemental citation. The other issue would be whether or not the petitioner has established a nexus between his political opinion and the persecution that he suffered. I will touch first on the jurisdictional issue. The government cited a Second Circuit case and the Supreme Court case in Nasrallah for the proposition that prospectively going forward, these types of cases where there is an instituted prior removal order, the court should not have jurisdiction to hear petitions for review when they're filed more than 30 days after the reinstated removal order. This court has stated, specifically in Ortiz-Alfaro, that in cases where there's an instituted a reinstated removal order, that removal order does not become final until the termination of the withholding proceedings, which is what occurred here. So given that, I do believe that obviously the court has jurisdiction to hear this particular case, and also going forward, the court should continue to have jurisdiction to hear these particular types of cases. With respect to the nexus issue, I do believe that the evidence shows that the petitioner has shown a nexus between his political opinion and his persecution.
Counsel, this is a troubling case, an unusual case, because you've got your client went to a meeting, arguably political opinion might be the PSG, but he had a woman in his truck who owed a debt. And the evidence seems to suggest that there is an equal or substantially similar amount of evidence that would suggest that the shots that were fired were by a creditor of hers as opposed to somebody who was trying to kill or hurt your client. My understanding of our precedent is if you have two different explanations, both of which are, shall I say, rational, that if the IJ and the BIA say that they're going with one, they still win. In other words, the government still wins in that case. Can you cite me to any case law that would say that my understanding is incorrect on that regard?
No, Your Honor, you are correct with respect to your analysis, but I would assert in this case that the petitioner has demonstrated that he was, in fact, persecuted based on his political opinion. The reason that I state that is he testified in great detail with the asylum officer regarding his political activities, which occurred a few months before the shooting.
Well, even if he did, I think Judge Smith's question is valid. There are two views. It's either A or B. And is there a requirement that the IJ or the BIA take the petitioner's position, opposed to what the IJ or BIA found?
No, I don't believe that there is a requirement that be done. But I'm just pointing to the evidence that I don't believe that the immigration judge's finding that it was based on his partner's assertion that it may have been due to some debt that she owed. I don't believe that finding is viable, and I think there's overwhelming evidence that shows that it was actually in fact because of his political opinion.
Why you say it's not viable? As I understand it, his companion testified that she was saying she thought he was shot at because she hadn't paid her debt. That's the one that the IJ decided to credit, because your client didn't know specifically why anybody would be shooting at him. He didn't think he had any enemies. He knew he had the political opinion. But the IJ chose to believe the woman's testimony and to credit the idea that a creditor had shot at her rather than that somebody unknown had shot at your client. And get back to what I said before, and I think my colleague is saying the same thing. If you have two viable possibilities and the IJ credits one, my understanding of our case law is unless you can show that there's not substantial evidence to back that up, your client loses on that proposition. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. So my position would be that I think that the petitioner's assertion that it was based on his political opinion is the viable reason for being persecuted. If you look at the...
Given my comment, that's right. Your client has alleged a possible explanation, but so has the woman in the case, and the IJ chose to favor her view, and there's substantial evidence to back it up. We're not saying that your client didn't present evidence, it's just that the IJ chose to favor the one. Right?
Yes, Your Honor. So as far as the substantial evidence, you state that that there's substantial evidence that his partner was being retaliated against by a supposed loan shark. In that same witness, and in the district attorney's report, the witness specifically stated that the person who was accused of retaliating against her called her and told her, "I had nothing to do with this. I'll even help you try to catch whoever did this to you." So I think that there's substantial evidence that she was not being retaliated against by a loan shark.
But that just has to do with weighing the evidence, and the IJ weighed it differently, apparently. Right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
You want to save any of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. All right, let's hear from the government, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. Afternoon here. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Alana Snyder, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Respectfully, we ask Your Honors to deny the petition for review, as the record does not compel reversal of the immigration judge's affirmance of the negative reasonable fear determination.
Well, and before can I ask you about the jurisdictional issue, is it the government's view that Nasrallah overrules our prior decision in Ortiz or Farr?
Yes, Your Honor. It's our position that Nasrallah versus Farr and Johnson versus Guzman-Chavez are clearly irreconcilable with this court's prior precedent in Ortiz-Alfaro and Ayala versus Sessions, which is also at play in this case.
And so because it's jurisdictional, we have to decide that issue before we can address the merits, correct?
Yes, Your Honors. That's the government's position in this case. And I'm happy to elaborate on that position for you as to why these positions are, why these cases are clearly irreconcilable.
If you could please.
Yes. In Nasrallah versus Barr, the Supreme Court spoke about what constitutes an order of removal. And in that case, it was specifically referencing or determining what an order of removal was for the purposes of a CAT order. And first, the Supreme Court looked to the statutory definition of order of removal at 8 U.S. Code 1101A47A. And of course, that really doesn't have any relevance in this case, because a negative reasonable fear determination or withholding only proceedings incident to a negative reasonable fear determination, there is no order that comes out of these proceedings. There's no order determining whether a non-citizen is removable or concluding that the non-citizen is removable. So second, the Supreme Court turned to whether, notwithstanding a CAT order in that case does not meet the statutory definition, it nevertheless merges into a final order of removal. So in determining whether a removability determination merges into an order of removal, the Supreme Court defined that a CAT order does not merge into the final order of removal because it does not affect the validity of the removability determination.
What do you think is the procedural vehicle for obtaining review of the negative credible fear determination?
Sure. It would be the government's position here that any review would be through a reinstated order of removal. This court has said before
the reinstated order happens, and then 30 days runs, and you don't have a determination necessarily on the withholding only application.
That is true. In
you some file a sort of premature appeal, and then the proceeding completes, and then you sort of go back to the earlier petition for review, and that now subsumes the things that happened after. Is that your position as to how it works?
That definitely could be the option, especially because in this jurisdiction, you have ripening of a petition for review under Martinez versus Barr, and we also have, of course, 1252b9, the zipper clause, which would allow for, it doesn't apply in this particular case, but say, for example, a non-citizen moved on to withholding only determination and then got denied and wanted to challenge that at the Court of Appeals, they could then essentially zipper that into the petition for review filed from the reinstatement order.
Let me ask you this. I imagine you're familiar with our case, Miller versus Gammy. You know what I'm talking about with that?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So if you take the concept that we have existing case law that would permit us to hear this case,
yes.
And you're saying that Nasrallah says the Supreme Court does something else, is it your view, the government's view, that under Miller versus Gammy, that what the Supreme Court has ruled there is irreconcilable with our existing case law? We cannot decide it any other way, and therefore we, in effect, have to overrule it or take it en banc. Is that your recommendation?
The government's position is that this panel can and should determine the jurisdictional issue because there is a clear reconcilability between Ortiz-Alfaro and Nasrallah versus Barr and Johnson versus Guzman-Chavez. And that this panel can, under Miller versus Gammy, rule on this jurisdictional issue. The one caveat to that position is that we are asking the court to provide perhaps a carve-out for individuals like the non-citizen in this case and apply the jurisdictional rule prospectively. And this is perhaps because there are non-citizens already in the pipeline and non-citizens like Mr. Acevedo Castro who already have those reinstatement orders and are already challenging withholding of removal, and they may be foreclosed from judicial review.
But that, with respect, that seems to fly in the face of at least my understanding of Miller versus Gammy. You're saying Miller versus Gammy should be the vehicle for adopting your position, yet you don't want us to mess with something that's in the pipeline, even though it may be irreconcilable. How do we reconcile your irreconcilability?
Understood, Your Honor. It's more of I think the Miller versus Gammy, as it's incumbent upon the court to sort of provide a clear picture of how to preserve judicial review moving forward for non-citizens, but for those non-citizens who are already in the pipeline.
But the law is what the law is, and if you're right that the Supreme Court has said there's no jurisdiction, we can't just say, well, we'll do that prospectively. And I mean, if the jurisdictional position in the other cases is wrong, it's wrong. And we don't have the ability to just say we're going to apply it prospectively. And that's not how it works.
The government does understand that position. And that is definitely the government understands that there are people in the pipeline who might be relying on.
Right, but I mean, the Supreme Court years ago decided a split over whether or not the time to appeal was extended by a misrepresentation from the bench by the district court as to the time. And there were a lot of people in the pipeline whose jurisdiction depended on that, and the Supreme Court said, no, it doesn't work, and all those people were out of luck. That's just how it works with jurisdictional rules. We
right.
can't just sort of play on and off that, well, we'll let these slide. The law is what it is. If there's no jurisdiction, there's no jurisdiction.
Right. And if the court so concludes, then, of course, in this case, the appropriate outcome that the government is asking for then would be dismissal of the petition for review and, of course, not denial of the petition for review. because, of course, the court would lack jurisdiction either way. Either it's because the negative reasonable fear determination is not a final order of removal, or then that's pretty much it.
I gather you would agree that your argument is a bit convoluted. Interesting, but a bit convoluted, right?
Of course, Your Honor. Yeah.
And so in this case, if there's any, Miller versus Gammy is, at least in my mind, really clear. It's got to be really irreconcilable. And I'm not getting that. I get the intellectual pinnings of what you're talking about, but it doesn't seem to be irreconcilable. Would you be able to eat lunch and feel good about it if we didn't blow this out on jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. I mean, I'm happy to turn to the merits
of
this case. Sure, absolutely. It's the government's position in this case that the immigration judge's determination that petitioner failed to show a reasonable possibility that he could demonstrate nexus to a legally cognizable protected ground is supported by substantial evidence. And as Your Honor actually pointed out, there were unknown assailants here. The assailants in this case said nothing. And importantly, the passenger in the car identified a loan shark as the person who had threatened her 5 days prior to the incident. The loan shark had stated that he was going to collect a debt from her, threatened her explicitly. They were attacked outside of the passenger's home. The Guatemalan police explicitly stated in the police report that they were looking for and suspected this loan shark. And the petitioner told the Guatemalan police that he had no problem with anybody in Guatemala, and he was aware of the loan shark incident with the individual. And to the petitioner's point that he had joined the UNE 4 months prior to this, this singular tenuous piece of evidence is insufficient to compel the conclusion that petitioner established nexus to his political opinion. And I can see that my time is running dangerously close to the end here. So if Your Honors have no further questions on either of the issues here.
Other questions? I think not. So your timing is excellent. We've run out of time.
Let's
ask Mr. Lucero to use his rebuttal time then.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just to touch on the jurisdictional issues, if we were to follow the Second Circuit's lead, this particular petitioner would not have any avenue or any mechanism to have an appellate review of the agency's denial of his reasonable fear and the immigration judge's denial of his reasonable fear claim or withholding claim. So that raises serious constitutional issues. This court themselves said in deciding the Ortiz-Alfaro case that denying judicial review in these particular circumstances raises serious constitutional concerns. So to assert that the petitioner has to file a petition for review after his prior removal is reinstated doesn't make any sense. At that point, he doesn't have a claim. In this particular case, he was not even interviewed by the asylum officer until 9 months later. So it doesn't make any sense for him to have filed a petition for review after his removal order was reinstated. So again, if we were to follow the Second Circuit lead, it would leave petitioners in this particular circumstance without any judicial review of their denials.
Is that your best argument against the government's position on jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor. I would argue that there would be constitutional issues because they would have no appellate review of the denial of their withholding claims.
Do you have other arguments you'd like to make? You got a little bit more time.
No, I will submit a rest at this point, Your Honor.
Very well. Any other questions by my colleague? All right. Thanks to both counsel for your argument in this case. The case just argued is submitted.